The difference is that with the noir, it was a genre, even though there's an argument, an academic argument, whether it actually constitutes a genre. And we are doing a single director with the Hitchcock. The connection is cinematic style. And that's why the film noir was called something Fortune and Style, and the Hitchcock is the master of style, you know, and that's a play on he is the master of suspense. But what I love about him is his style.
But a lot of noir elements in Hitchcock.
Yes. In fact, I added in that noir seminar that I taught a few semesters ago, I imported some Hitchcock into the noir class.
How did you settle on the films in this series? All great films, most of them well-known Hitchcock films.
My criterion is style, is cinematic style. He does, not every one of his films is dripping with cinematic style the way these six are.
What almost made the cut?
Oh, well, I mean, I got some blowback from friends and family about not including Rear Window, for example. Folks seem to really love that film. And
a lot of style there.
Their style, but not as much. No, I mean, it's more looking at that mise-en-scène, which is a fancy French word for that big picture of all those rooms. There's not a lot going on. There are some fathead shots of Jimmy Stewart and so on, but not as much. And that's why it didn't make the cut for me.
Fathead shots?
Yeah, this is a piece I published a couple of years ago, and there's a link to it on the website, the Normal Theater website, where you can read that chapter about a particular shot that Hitchcock developed. It's just an extreme close-up, which usually is not stylized. In the sense, what I mean by that is it doesn't have an embedded meaning. It just is intensifying. Close-ups intensify something that's already been established. But for him, he takes these guys who are all using a phrase from Notorious, where Cary Grant throughout the entire film is denying his feelings for Ingrid Bergman's character. And finally at the end, when she is poisoned and laying on the bed and needs him to be the Prince Charming to rescue her, he finally admits he loves her. And that the entire film is her trying to get him to say that. And he gives a speech by, saying, I was a fat-headed guy full of pain, and I couldn't tell you that. And that's so I take that line, and I show throughout the course of Hitchcock's career, he has these fatheads.
Rope isn't on the list either. Does that go beyond style to gimmicky?
Well, it's fascinating film, right? Because no edits, allegedly.
Sure.
It's just, you know, straight reels of film, 8 minutes or so long. That's more like almost like a play.
Yeah. So Alfred Hitchcock, master of style, this film series begins with Shadow of a Doubt, a film about danger right under our noses, about people who aren't who they seem. Let's listen to a clip. Here's Charlie, who may be clever by half, played by Teresa Wright, unwittingly playing a dangerous game with her uncle, Charlie, for whom she's named, and played by Joseph Cotten.
Uncle Charlie, I know a secret about you you don't think I know.
What secret?
Well, remember I said you couldn't hide anything from me because I'd find it out? Well, now I know there was something in the evening paper about you.
About me in the evening paper?
About you. And that's why you played that game with Ann and Roger. You didn't want us to know and you wanted to tear the paper. But now I know, you might as well tell me.
Well, you've got me there, Charlie. Only it wasn't about me. It was about someone I used to know.
There.
None of your business.
Oh, Uncle Charlie, you're hurting me.
Oh, Charlie.
Your hand.
Charlie, I didn't mean to hurt you. I was just fooling. It was nothing.
Besides this being Hitchcock's favorite of his films, why is it your pick for the six-week film school? And is there anything you want to say about that particular scene?
So this is one of the first films, Hitchcock films, I wrote about in graduate school. It's not just because Hitchcock loves it. I can see why he loves it. It's kind of a love story to America. He had become just recently a U.S. citizen, and it's when Joseph Cotten's character, Uncle Charlie, calls young Charlie on the telephone to what leaves a message. It's as if he conjures it up. He's like, yes, operator, I want Santa Rosa, California. And then we get a lap dissolve up to this gorgeous small town in California. The scene that you just played a clip from is the first time young Charlie sees that her uncle is odd. And Thornton Wilder, speaking of American Love Story, Thornton Wilder, the great playwright who wrote Our Town, is hired to work on the script for Hitchcock. And the fact that while this already appears in the write-up for this piece, the story idea, his name is Uncle Charlie, and as we know, us baseball fans know, in America, that's a euphemism for curveball. Huh. You know, Lord. In fact, Dwight Gooden, they called it Lord Charles. But so he's a screwball. He's a curveball. We you cannot figure him out. Although the film tells,
he's a creepy guy.
He's very, Joseph Cotten is brilliant
he nails
in this role.
He nails the role.
He does,
role.
And we see him before young Charlie sees him. We see that he is violent. He smashes a glass, a shot glass, and we know he's trouble.
Where does this fall in Hitch's career, and what did it do for him as a director?
So it's as I mentioned, he's finally in America. And he was dying to get to America. He loved England, of course, and his mother was there. But he felt that America was head and shoulders above as far as innovation. And, you know, Hollywood had all of these capabilities. This is, you know, I mean, he starts making films in the silent era. So he's more than halfway through his career.
It's 1943, I think.
This is 43, yeah.
You mentioned Notorious with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman. That show's February 8th.
Yeah.
A World War II spy thriller set in Brazil. What do you want to say about this film?
Shadow of a Doubt is Hitchcock's favorite film. This is Francois Truffaut's favorite Hitchcock film. And you can see why. There's all kinds of lovely style and terrific camera work and shots. In fact, without giving too much away, Ingrid Bergman's character, Alicia Huberman, is being poisoned later, halfway through the film. And there's a terrific shot of the poisoned coffee cup. And Hitchcock had an enormous one built so that it would read in the camera. You know, if you actually thought about it, that coffee cup is too big. But we don't think about it, right? I mean, the great thing about this, the style is
so it looms large in the frame.
It looms large in the frame. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's something to look for.
Yes.
In Notorious.
Absolutely.
Strangers on a Train, a great concept if you really want to knock someone off. The concept is that strangers meet and decide to trade murders. Since each is unconnected to the circumstance and the person being killed, they'd be above suspicion, right?
Yes.
So let's listen to a clip.
Okay.
What is a life for two guys? Some people are better off dead. I don't like your wife and my father, for instance. Oh, that reminds me of a wonderful idea I had once. I used to put myself to sleep at night, figuring it out. Now, let's say that you'd like to get rid of your wife.
It's a morbid thought.
No. Just suppose. Let's say that you had a very good reason.
Let's say.
Now, you'd be afraid to kill her. You know why? You'd get caught. And what would trip you up? The motive. Now, here's my idea.
I'm afraid I haven't got time to listen, Bruce.
Listen, it's so simple, too. Two fellows meet accidentally, like you and me. No connection between them at all. Never saw each other before. Each one has somebody that he'd like to get rid of. So, they swap murders.
Swap murders.
Each fellow does the other fellow's murder. Then there's nothing to connect them. Each one has murdered a total stranger. Like, you do my murder, I do yours.
We're coming into my station.
A scene from Strangers on a Train, showing February 22nd, is the third film in Hitchcock film series organized by ISU English professor Bill McBride. He's calling it a film school, with discussion led by McBride following each film. So Bill, Bruno, and Guy talking about trading murders. What should people pay attention to during this scene on the train?
Okay, so these fellows, one is Bruno and one is Guy. And Bruno is one of these fatheads, one of these curveballs, one of these, you know, he's a quote-unquote mama's boy, and not unlike Norman Bates, and I know I'm jumping ahead, but, you know, this is an obsession with Sir Alfred Hitchcock. And Guy gives him just enough of an encouragement after being plied with drinks and so on, and that's all that Bruno needs, and he's off and running. This is based on a terrific interesting Patricia Highsmith novel, her first, and of course there's a much more of a queer presence with Bruno in the novel. It's there in the film, but not as much.
Queer as in not odd, but homosexual.
Homosexual.
Yeah. How's the plan work out?
Oh, you just got to stay tuned. I'm not giving that one away. So, but there's some terrific moments ending with a merry-go-round that goes around.
Anything in particular that sets this film apart from the rest of Hitchcock's catalog?
I think so. I think it's there's really no strong female lead to speak of in this film. Hitchcock loves trains. several of his films involve that. In fact, the end of North by Northwest ends with a train going in a tunnel without any subtlety.
Well, and Uncle Charlie has an issue with a train. Oh,
yes,
well.
Yes. Yeah, we have the climax. Yeah.
You're ending with three of Hitchcock's most well-known films, in my opinion, Vertigo, Psycho, and The Birds.
Yeah.
Most of us at this point have probably seen these films only on the small screen. Right. What are we missing by not having a big screen experience with Hitchcock, the way it was supposed to be seen? Let's start with Vertigo.
Right. So Vertigo is the only one I have seen on the big screen because in the late 90s, it was restored. So I went up to Chicago and, you know, 70 millimeter, and I saw it. And the problem with that restoration is... the colors jump now, you know, the print is gorgeous. However, while they were in there, they couldn't leave well enough alone, and they worked on the soundtrack. Mm. So, at the beginning of the film, there's a rooftop chase, and a revolver, a policeman's revolver, two shots. We hear them in the 1958 release, and everything I had ever seen before that, it sounded like a 1958 gun. Now, it sounds like a photon torpedo. Mm. Okay, and when she is thrown, without giving too much off, a body is thrown off onto a roof, it used to sound like a body thudding. Now it sounds like a burlap bag filled with anvils.
So
that's the problem. But back to your question about the big screen, that's the only one I've seen on the big screen, and I am dying to see them as well.
There are some vertigo-inducing moments for the audience in just how they watch that film, the way the focus, they focus in as the camera pulls out, and it sort of is disorienting. I assume that would be more dramatic on the big screen.
Yeah. That's the classic Vertigo shot that Erman Roberts, a second director cameraman, developed, who doesn't get credit in the film for it. It's not focusing, it's zooming in and tracking out
at the same time
to give you that vertigo feeling when perhaps you've had too much to drink and you no longer can tell the difference between the wall and the floor. Yeah.
So I've seen Birds on the big screen.
Oh.
It wasn't a restored print. It was pretty rough, but I did see that at the Normal Theater a few years ago. And I actually cringed as the bird came flying toward the screen. I think it's a seagull, and it smacks the phone booth.
Yeah.
Right. So it sort of put me back in my seat for a moment. That didn't happen on the small screen. A critic recently wrote, "I love the way Hitchcock juggles shrill B-movie histrionics with the chill art house gloss in The Birds." What do you think about that statement?
So I'm not sure what that critic means, but I have a...
Well, there's some B-movie elements.
No,
but it's
certainly.
But it's got this art house gloss to
it. I have an inkling, and that is there's a terrific moment when Melanie Daniels, Tippi Hedren, when she is watching from the diner and the... fire is about to catch, the cigarette butt is about to catch the gas on the...
She's putting two and two together, watching how this place is going to play out.
And what we see are jump cuts. So a jump cut is a moment when film is missing. There are little bits taken out, and we see Melanie look one way, and then look another way, and then look a third way. And it's not unlike Elsa Lanchester in The Bride of Frankenstein, if you remember her, when she finally is animated and comes to life. There's something similar going on there, and I, in my notes that I publish on the website, the Normal Theater website, I compare those two moments, and it's very, quote-unquote, arty.
Is The Birds about birds?
Well, I mean, so...
One level, sure, but what's the real message here?
Well, I'm not going to claim it, but Hitchcock pushed away the environmental reading, you know, that this was a warning of nature fighting back because we're not treating, I'll call it her, right. You know, I mean, we are probably the only culture that separates ourselves from nature and uses nature and maybe abuses it. And this is also one of the first quote-unquote disaster films, right? Mm. And if you think about those disaster films, they are, many of them, making a kind of pro-environmental point.
Some regard The Birds as Hitchcock's last greatest film. Others say it's 1972's Frenzy. What do you think?
That's why I end the series with The Birds.
Do you think The Birds is
I mean, Marnie is interesting. His next one with Tippi Hedren and Sean Connery. But I think it's The Birds, you know.
It's called The 6-Week Film School, and it gets started Wednesday at the Normal Theater. Bill McBride is curating the series and leading a post-screening discussion.
I'll say a little something at the beginning, too, just quickly.
Great. Yeah, Bill, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Always a pleasure, Mike.